Two weary travelers from Jerusalem, walking with a stranger down that dusty highway. Two weary travelers from Jerusalem, walking with a stranger down that dusty road. And they walked another hour to Emmaus town, and shared their supper till the sun went down. When he broke the bread, then the word spread around that Christ was on that gospel road. Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John told about Jesus on that dusty highway. Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John told about Jesus on that dusty road.
Hello, this is Carl Weinschenk for the Daily Music Break. The Daily Music Break covers all music, regardless of era or genre. We are on the internet at www.dailymusicbreak.com. Please stop by to check out the music and sign up for free email newsletters. Today, we're absolutely thrilled to be speaking to Michael Streisgruth, who is a professor at LeMoyne College, about the great Johnny Cash. Good afternoon, Mike. How are you? Well, good morning, actually.
Hello, Carl. Doing well. Good to be with you.
Thank you very much for taking time out. Really very much appreciate it. I've wanted to do a podcast on Johnny Cash for a long time, and I really appreciate you taking time out. To start with, now the book is called Johnny Cash, The Biography. When was it published, and where can people find it?
The book was published in 2006. It can be found on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, wherever good books are sold, as they say.
Okay, great. And and have you written other books about music, about any other topic?
I have, actually. The biography is my third book on Johnny Cash. I edited a book called Ring of Fire, The Johnny Cash Reader, and also a book called Johnny Cash at Folsom Prison, which was about his legendary show in 1968 at Folsom Prison in California. My most recent book is called Outlaw, which is about Waylon, Willie, Chris, and the Renegades of Nashville.
Sounds great. Let me ask it in two parts. What drew you to that type of music first, and then what drew you in to Cash?
Well, I'm always interested in music that sticks to your ribs, that, mm-hmm. that gives you something to think about, that tells stories, and that defines country music as well as the blues and folk. And so I've always been attracted to these roots genres, and Cash, of course, was the A1 storyteller. Here he was in the late 50s and the early 60s, in the midst of a kind of a lot of teenage rock and roll, selling a lot of records that talked about a nation growing up, that talked about history, that talked about the rural experience. So Cash told these stories, and I always admired his music for that reason.
Where is Cash? I was thinking about this. I've never really been clear about it. Where is he kind of in the lineage of music as compared to Elvis? Elvis seems like he was similar but different, and Elvis might be one of the two or three people who, you know, are as famous or as much of a deity as Cash. How do those two sort of relate in juxtaposition to each other?
Well, they certainly came of age at the same time, and basically in the same city, in Memphis, Tennessee. They both recorded earlier in their careers for Sam Phillips at Sun Records. I think you might say that Elvis was more strongly influenced by rhythm and blues, mm-hmm. Which Cash did not have much access to at all during his childhood. Cash grew up in Northeast Arkansas in a actually a community that barred black people. So he had virtually no interaction with black people, and certainly any live black music. Whereas I think Elvis's interaction with black culture was much more significant.
Mm-hmm. Did Elvis end up being more different than what he started as than Cash did? That's kind of an odd question. But I think of Elvis, you know, playing Vegas and with the jumpsuits and the whole thing at the end. And I think of Cash being obviously a much older guy, but being relatively similar to what he started out as. So I guess that just answered for me that question. But obviously you've written the book on this. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think there's a lot to be said for the point that you're making. I do think Elvis really worked hard, perhaps, at reinventing himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Cash, although, you know, Cash was never afraid to explore and go down all kinds of different roads. I think Cash was perhaps very concerned with maintaining a connection to his roots and being true to his roots. And that's particularly, and this was true for Elvis too, but it was particularly true in Cash's interest in gospel music. The interesting thing about gospel music is that whenever Cash had kind of the authority of his success or the capital of his success, mm-hmm. he always spent it on gospel music. So that was the music that imbued his childhood. It was his music that was at the heart of what he did. He wanted to be a gospel singer, just like Elvis wanted to be a gospel singer.
Mm-hmm.
But of course Elvis would return to that time and time again. But Cash, you know, in very significant ways, continued to remain rooted in that gospel music tradition.
It's very, very interesting. I do these interviews, and I don't think that deeply about how I feel about these various guys, other than I like their music, before having to kind of prepare for the interviews. It's a very interesting topic. Who was Saul, and please correct my pronunciation of his name if it needs to be, who is Saul Holliff?
Saul Holliff, yes, Saul Holliff. Saul Holliff, he was Johnny Cash's manager throughout most of the 1960s, a Canadian who was a show business entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
He often booked Johnny Cash into his venues that he owned in Canada. And the two struck up a relationship, and Holliff really pushed Cash to think about other venues, other options in his career, to think about television, to think about recording with other producers, to professionalize his operation a little bit, to work on marketing and press kits and advertising and things of that nature, and getting involved in endorsing products and advertising. So he really brought a kind of a sophisticated element to the Johnny Cash package, if you will. But he ceased to be Johnny Cash's manager in the early 70s when a man by the name of Lou Robin, who was a big promoter of concerts in the United States, took over Cash's management.
Mm-hmm. I read a bit about a movie made by Holliff's son, you know, it's a long, sad story of, I guess, Holliff's home life and the misunderstandings between him and his son. But a big element there was the fact that Holliff was Jewish. And of course, Cash was a born again Christian. Did that, you know, what element did that play? I was kind of just surprised to read that. You know, I kind of did a double take on that.
Well, I think it was a symbiotic relationship. They both benefited from it, despite, you know, whatever their religious backgrounds were.
Right.
And I think throughout his career, although Cash did not grow up around Jewish people, right. There were very few Jewish people in rural Arkansas in the 1930s. Mm-hmm. He, through show business and through getting out into the world, began to meet many Jewish people in the business who mm-hmm. worked with. So Holof wasn't the only Jewish person he worked with. I will say also that, of course, Cash was a student of Christianity. Mm-hmm. Student of the Bible, and obviously the connection to Judaism there is very strong.
Mm-hmm.
He always kind of enjoyed the opportunities to talk with Jewish people about their faith traditions. For example, in fact, Johnny's eldest daughter Roseanne Cash is married to a Jewish man named John Leventhal,
mm-hmm.
and she was somewhat insecure about telling her father that she planned to marry a Jew, and his response was, "It's about time. I've been waiting for a Jewish person to join the family." So,
well,
Cash was a very deep. He's very deep in a lot of ways, and also very very open as well.
Well, I'm going to skip ahead a little bit because it just makes sense at this point. He had a very close relationship. Please explain who Rick Rubin is and the nature of what he did for Cash and that apparently very close relationship those two had.
Yeah, well, Rick Rubin is a well-known producer, well-known label boss. He has a history in rap and hip hop and mm-hmm. metal, and in the early 1990s, he was kind of sitting back and watching what was happening to Johnny Cash's career, which was not a pretty picture. Cash had lost his recording contract; he had no major label recording contract. He wasn't making the charts anymore. People weren't talking about Johnny Cash. And Rubin approached Cash's management and asked for a meeting. And he talked to Cash about recording music in a kind of a stripped down, back to basics way,
mm-hmm.
Without all of the production that right. had come to surround Cash's recordings. And that resulted in a renaissance for Johnny Cash.
Mm-hmm.
Cash recorded an album that was basically Cash and his guitar, called American Recordings, and it brought Cash back. And Rubin's machine, his marketing machine, was quite sophisticated, and he was able to kind of tap the dark image of Johnny Cash, and sell that to the younger people who bought his other records,
right.
who were into artists who had a kind of a dark countenance.
And the personal relationship between Rubin and Cash was pretty deep too. I was reading an article, I think it's Salon magazine, or website to that effect. They became very close.
Well, they did. In fact, toward the end of Johnny Cash's career, I think they spoke daily.
Mm-hmm.
And I should say through the end of his life, they spoke daily. And Rubin continued to give Cash a stage, even to his final days. And when Cash was ill, he knew that one thing keeping him alive was working.
Right.
And so Rubin continued to work with him to come up with recordings that were really Cash's lifeblood.
You know, one of the questions I sent to you, and I'm going to ask now. I apologize, I haven't asked the questions I sent to you, so I'm sorry about that, because this is also interesting. When you say something, it just kind of stimulates another question. But it's cliche to say that a particular person encompasses many contradictions. I mean, it's true of all of us, but it seems particularly apt in the case of Johnny Cash. I mean, here's this deep guy who wrote just, some pretty amazing lyrics and performed, in an obviously very, very deep, profound way. But he was also, he was involved with drugs throughout his career. He just, had a lot of negative stuff. Was he was he even more contradictory than the average person you might meet on the street?
Well, I just think his contradictions were better known. I mean, as you point out, we're all contradictions, and Chris Christopherson wrote about it. He's a walking contradiction, partly truth and partly fiction. And
right.
I think a lot of people thought either Christopherson was talking about himself or talking about Johnny Cash, but he really was talking about all of us. And I think that's one of the reasons that Cash is appealing to so many people, that in his contradictions, we see our own contradictions.
Right.
And in Cash's failings, we see our own failings. And in his bid for redemption, you know, we see our own hopes for redemption. And that I think, was his life was so public, his experiences were so public, that they you know, they gave people something to invest in, I think.
Yeah, so is it true, what you describe as a true artist, really. I mean, if you can make people recognize those things in themselves, I mean, it doesn't get any more artistic than that, probably. Did you come away, now you indicated you've written three books that were either about it, you know, had a lot of Cash in them. Do you feel differently about Johnny Cash now than you did before?
Well, I think that writing, I subscribe to this idea that writing is learning, and certainly I learned about, gained new insights and new appreciations of Johnny Cash, and to me, what shone through was this fierce commitment to telling the stories that he had experienced, that others had experienced, that told the stories of our country, and that to me is his legacy, really, as a folk singer, who commented on the American experience. And I really just, whenever I hear Cash singing about men who are in prison, or truck drivers, or farmers,
mm-hmm.
I'm just reminded of just how valuable he is, and how valuable his music continues to be in kind of providing insights into the American experience.
Mm-hmm. If anyone who listens to this hasn't seen the video of Cash singing Hurt, the Nine Inch Nails song, I don't usually do this, but I just highly recommend it. It's more an experience than watching a video, as far as I'm concerned. Do you feel that is truly how Cash felt towards the end of his life, or do you think that was just, you know, not an acting job, or just a partial, sort of a partial essay on how he felt about himself?
Well, you know, the video is so poignant because it does portray, you know, the decline of Cash himself, and I suppose the world around him.
Right.
And I think coming at a time when he was on death's door, it stirred a lot of conversation and a lot of analysis, I guess, of Cash, and of course the video itself. And you know, Cash always understood that he was a performer,
right.
And sometimes he would say, you know, it's time to go play Johnny Cash, and I think to some extent he was playing Johnny Cash there. I mean, he got the fact that, I think, the video was commenting on his very public demise.
Right.
And I think he didn't hesitate to be part of that.
I have two quick questions about that video. Now, June Carter passed away before him. How did they get her into the video?
Well, my understanding is that the video was shot at his home, right. And she was there. She was around. And
I'm sorry to interrupt you. It was that far before he passed away.
Yes, it was. The video was made before she passed away. Exactly.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And was that his childhood home that, you know, they have one little part of the video where he's in an old house, you know, looking around, looking through the windows. Is that where he grew up?
That is that that was his home in Dyess, Arkansas, which today is a museum. You can go to Dyess, Arkansas,
mm-hmm.
and visit it and get a picture of what it was like for Cash as a child in rural Arkansas.
Mm-hmm. Michael, this has been absolutely great. I have no more questions, but what do you think if you were me and you were asking, you know, it's kind of hard to do an interview about a legend. It's a lot harder than someone who's unknown. You can just kind of ask factual questions. What am I missing that can be summed up in a couple of minutes, if anything?
Well, I think you've done a great job of covering the important bases here. Mm-hmm. You know, I think with Cash, that and I want to go back to what I was saying about gospel music.
Mm-hmm.
People talk about the Rick Rubin years that you brought up, and they talk about his prison concerts. Again, I think his true devotion was gospel music, and he made a film in the early 1970s. And an accompanying album, a double album called The Gospel Road. And for Cash, I think that may have been his proudest achievement. Yet it because it's gospel music, it kind of lurks below the surface. And I would like to, you know, to urge people that the album is available, the DVD is available to check out the Gospel Road, because I think it really was Cash speaking his heart. Not that his other work wasn't,
right.
but this was something that he was very, very proud of.
Okay, well that's I'm glad I asked and gave you the opportunity to say that. And again, could you please let folks know that the name of your book is Johnny Cash, the Biography, and it's available on Amazon and Barnes and Noble and places like that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Still in print.
Still in print. Great. I hope it stays in print. Michael, I'd like to again thank you very, very much for taking time out to chat about obviously a very, very important person in American music history. This is Carl Weinschenk for the Daily Music Break at www.dailymusicbreak.com. Please stop by to hear great music across all eras and genres. Here's some podcast interviews like this. Here's some playlists and sign up for free email newsletters. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
And you took me to St. Louis, later on down the river. A freighter said she's been here, but she's gone, boy, she's gone. I found her trail in Memphis, but she just walked up the bluff. She raised a few eyebrows and then she went on town alone. Now won't you bat it down by Baton Rouge, River Queen or Bullitt. Take that woman on down to New Orleans, New Orleans. Go on, I've had enough, dump my blues down in the Gulf. She loves you, Big River, more than me.